Thanks for calling, Stuart. We've just been actually been listening to an interview with Charles Hardy. Describing his time in Caracas, and he's just released a book about it. Thanks for talking to Tune FM, Stuart. And I guess I've just been telling our listeners that it was a big, quite a violent week in Caracas last week due to the refusal of the government to grant or renew the licence of the main television chain there. And Stuart is on the Latin American Bureau of Green Left Weekly. So perhaps, Stuart, you could explain just what was behind all that. I think there was a demonstration 10,000 strong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing that hasn't really been reported in the mainstream media is there were much larger demonstrations by those who were supporting the government. I mean, like you say, like, I mean, it was probably 10,000 strong according to most accounts at the maximum for the demonstration that occurred, organised by the opposition to Chavez, in opposition to the decision that the government made, and it was announced last year, even before the last election, that it wouldn't renew the licence of one of the main television stations in Venezuela, RCTV. However, there were much larger demonstrations that occurred, and in fact there was one yesterday. I haven't been able to see any figures yet for how big it was, but it was expected to probably exceed 1 million people. However, I don't think we can necessarily expect that the corporate media are going to cover that. Instead, they've given blanket coverage to much smaller demonstrations, including demonstrations of, you know, a few hundred, maybe a few thousand at most, students from the more elite universities who've been sent out effectively to just hold, you know, to hold riots, to actually burn tires, to block traffic in order to create as much chaos as they can.
Right, and what were the reasons given for the refusal to grant the licence renew the licence?
Well, I think this is something that is very hard for people to figure out if they just rely on what's been in the international media, or which has generally just taken the position of the Venezuelan opposition, because what the Venezuelan opposition claims and what you know, the United States government claims, the US Senate passed a motion along these lines, and what has been presented as fact by the international media is that what's happened is that the government has closed down a TV station that is critical to it. However, this is a long way from the reality. It's actually a complete twisting of the facts. In fact, all that has happened is this station, RCTV, they had a license that was granted to them in 1987, a 20-year license to use a state government-owned channel, government-owned airwave, which was Channel 2. And the government, it has expired. It expired on May 27, and the government has chosen, rather than to renew that license, it has chosen to set up a new TV channel that will be self-funding. It will not have people appointed from the government, and it will not produce any TV shows itself, but it will actually provide a voice for the growing number of independent media producers inside Venezuela. And that RCTV wouldn't be closed. It isn't being closed. It will continue on cable. So there's no actual censorship at all involved.
What is the state of play in the media in Venezuela at the moment? Are there many independent broadcasters?
Yeah, there's a real growing number. I mean, this is one of the things that you don't necessarily get again in the international media, but is in Venezuela. I mean, the overwhelming majority of the media is private, and the majority of the media that is private is also quite strongly anti-Chavez. I mean, the figures have been something like out of 81 TV stations, 71 are private owned, 706 out of 708 radio stations, and all of the newspapers are private owned. But what's happened is, and I think this is starts to get to the heart of the issue, what's happened is under the Chavez government was previously been an extremely strong monopoly over the media, in fact by two people, and the owner of RCTV is one of them, Marcel Grenier, a multimillionaire, and they are both by marriage. Both these two people by marriage go back to the founder of RCTV. And together, Grania and another billionaire, Gustavo Cineros, they control over 80% of all media produced in Venezuela, all information being produced in Venezuela.
That's extraordinary. I mean, it makes you wonder how... I mean, last year in the elections, Chavez won with a two-thirds majority. I mean,
yes.
How does he do that with 80% of the media against him?
Well, I mean, that's a very good question. I think it's a sign of just how discredited really the... what really is an oligarchy. And I think that if you look at the people that own the media, I mean, Cineros is one of the richest men in Latin America. He owns huge amounts of industry across the region, including in Venezuela and a number of other places. He owns Coca-Cola bottling. Granier does this, also has a whole series of other interests. And I think that, I mean, what's happened is a complete discrediting of that oligarchy. Before Chavez was elected, they'd already lost, you know, you have a situation where the majority of people live in poverty. They're an oil-rich country, and all they see is that their country is allowed to be raped and pillaged by multinationals. They see that the politicians are in the pockets of the oligarchs like Granier and Cisneros, and this creates a situation where, you know, incredibly desperate people, I mean, that gives rise to Chavez's election. And one of the things that the media did that completely discredited themselves, which is why, despite their control of all that media, despite that, they're losing, people no longer believe what they say. And the defining moment, and this gets to the heart of why it is that RCTV's license wasn't renewed, is in April 2002, where the media didn't simply support a military coup against Chavez, who'd been put in power by the poor majority, you know, in an election because they were so sick of the way things were being run before. They didn't simply support it, they were crucial to organising it. And that has become completely obvious. Not only did they give blanket coverage in the lead-up to the coup, to the demonstrations that led to the coup, they deliberately distorted footage that made it appear Chavez was responsible for the deaths of peaceful protesters when he wasn't. They lied that he resigned even when they knew that he hadn't resigned. And they were publicly thanked. They were publicly thanked by the coup plotters. I mean, they went on TV and said that we would like to thank RCTV and Venevision, which is the station owned by Cisneros. They did that repeatedly a few times in their time in power. That's why they, even though they have this control, that means two things. One, people don't listen to them, but two, there's a very strong push in Venezuela, which the government is facilitating, to democratize the media so that you don't get coup plotters running things anymore.
Has it gone forward at all, the democratization of the media? For example, would there be community radio stations like TuneIn FM?
Yes, absolutely, and growing. I mean, we should get a sense that it obviously still has a long way to go, and the figures I gave about the amount of media controlled by those people gives a sense of it, but it's absolutely growing. And some of the things that the Chavez government has done, when Chavez was first elected, and this is enshrined in the constitution that was passed by a referendum after Chavez got elected, there was a decree that was passed, a law that was passed that meant that allowed anyone who wished to actually use the radio electrical spectrum, that is, anyone would be able to broadcast. And what that did was that legalized hundreds of previously illegal pirate radio stations, the sort of stations which in the United States are still nominally illegal. So he did that. Plus, you've seen a real, through the changes in Venezuela, increased organizing the community, you've seen a real explosion of particularly community radio, but also community TV. And one of the laws that has been passed by the government, Law on Social Responsibility in Television and Radio, makes it, has contributed to this by actually, it mandates that 5 hours per day have to be produced by all TV stations in Venezuela, have to produce basically five hours per day by independent national producers, with no single producer contributing more than 20%. That combined with the government putting aside a whole lot of funds to promote independent media production has meant that there really has been the beginnings of an explosion, really. And that's what the government has set this new channel up to do, to actually provide a national voice to facilitate that. And really, despite all the criticisms, the real question that has to be asked is why should RCTV, why should Marcel Granier have the automatic right to use a government-owned license when he's perfectly capable, as he's doing now, of using cable? Why does he have it and not the large numbers of new media producers who will now be able to actually get a voice through this new channel? Particularly when Marcel Granier has run the station in a way that violated Venezuela's law, was responsible for a coup, is responsible for over 655 infractions during this time of Venezuelan broadcasting law, It hasn't paid the fines that have been levied against it. It is responsible for the non-payment of taxes. So all it has done with this concession that's been granted, this privilege really to use the government station, is spit in the face of the Venezuelan people. And then the government makes the decision, well, because of that, we're not going to close you down. You can still broadcast. But the thing that's under our control, this particular channel, we're going to give it to other people who've never had a voice before because they're not multimillionaires.
That's amazing. I mean, basically, all it's, what it's doing then is just freeing up the airwaves for more civilized broadcasters. Some of those infractions you mentioned, you know, I don't think they'd be tolerated in Australia or the United States.
Well, there's laws. I mean, particularly in the United States, I mean, there's broadcasting laws. It's also in their constitution about rebellion. And I think that's what a lot of people have pointed out, to which has not been a satisfactory answer. Because, unfortunately, a whole lot of groups, I mean, groups such as Reporters Without Borders, who really, whose claim to independence is negligible considering the fact they're actually funded by the US government, but you know, other organisations, Human Rights Watch, and certainly the arguments of the opposition plus the US Senate and you know, people like Condoleezza Rice have come out and criticised this. What no one has been able to answer, even when they've been asked point blank, is what would happen in any other country if a media station participated in a coup against the government and helped facilitate it? What would happen? And I think that what's astonishing, and fairness and accuracy in reporting in the media, US NGO pointed out in a statement on this issue, criticising the way the corporate media have lied about it and said it's been closed down when it hasn't. They pointed out, they said it's just frankly remarkable that this station has been allowed to continue broadcasting at all. Mm-hmm. And that all the government has done, it didn't try to shut it down, it didn't try to jail the owners of RCTV, it didn't even try to get its license cancelled, even though it had strong legal grounds to do so. It merely waited until it had run out and then chose to give the concession to someone else. And I think that the answer really has got to be no other country in the world would probably have done this.
Yeah, it sounds like he's been too kind to the...
Well, there are people who say that in Venezuela. How can you let him do it?
Oh, well, that's... we could do with a bit of that here, I think, in Australia. There were rumours last year. I think Costello was getting very upset with the idea that Hugo Chavez has been invited to come to Australia for a visit. What's the state of play on that, Stuart? Is he likely to be able to make that visit?
I think it probably depends a little bit on what's happening in Venezuela, but we know that the Venezuelan, I mean, it's been organised by the Australia-Venezuela Solidarity Network, Greenleaf Weekly is supporting it, and we've got a large number of signatures, particularly from a whole lot of, you know, various politicians, people like Kerry Nettle from the Greens, a whole lot of trade union leaders and community leaders that have signed on to this, as well as, you know, many ordinary people, and we've done this campaign in conjunction with the Venezuelan embassy in Canberra. So it's something that there's definitely interest from the Venezuelan government. They would like to be able to put Chavez to come out here because he's visited almost every other part of the world. And anyone who's seen footage or read the speeches or have been lucky enough to hear Chavez speak at these gatherings, I mean, knows that he uses it as a real kind of attempt to both educate and inspire people to struggle against the crimes of the global system, the crimes of imperialism and of capitalism. And and I think that the Venezuelan government, you know, that for them, the revolution that they're carrying out, which includes the democratization of the media, really they don't see it as just being for Venezuelans. They see it as being for the world. They realize it's a global battle. And certainly, you know, they are keen for Chavez to come. The one thing is that they want to make sure that it's worthwhile, that there needs to be enough of a groundswell inside Australia. And that's obviously something that they'll assess. I mean, we've been running this campaign so far. I think, they'll probably assess. So they're definitely keen.
Yeah, he certainly sounds like a man of the people, and sounds as if he probably wouldn't mind talking on community radio if he did come here.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. But the thing that has to be understood about what's happening now, I mean, it's not simply, I think, that we have a case where there are lies being spread, really, about the Venezuelan government. I think that the lies are so extreme and so really ridiculous once you actually get to the facts of the matter, like once you actually strip away the lies and distortions. That what we're seeing, well, this is certainly the claim of not just the Venezuelan government, but there was a statement that was put out just 2 days ago by over 600 community organisations, trade unions, social movements, communal councils, which are new grassroots bodies that are springing up across Venezuela, are claiming that what's behind this RCTV case is the latest attempt by the United States government, which we know through documents is that provides a lot of the funds for the Venezuelan opposition.
So it's like an exercise in destabilisation,
yes,
taken to a new stage.
Yes, definitely. And I think that's where you get the combination of the violent riots on the streets by, you know, a minority, which then get broadcast around the world without almost any coverage at all of the bigger pro-Chavez demonstrations in favour of the decision to set up a new channel. Combined with this international campaign, combined with, you know, the pressure coming on governments in the region to actually, you know, condemn Chavez in an act of extreme hypocrisy, because in April, this is what no one else mentions, in April in Peru, six media outlets were closed. They were closed. They had their licences just taken away from them. And none of the groups that have criticised Chavez have said a word. I mean, I've looked at all the websites. I can't find a single word of even comment on it, much less any of the governments or, you know, political leaders in the United States or other countries that have criticised Chavez have said anything about the decision by Peru. And in fact, the media have even reported, without any sense of irony, the statements by the Peruvian president, who's a US ally, saying, it's terrible what Chavez has done. And no one's actually pointed out, well, exactly the same thing, only six times more happened in Peru. So I think this is clearly really got nothing to do with freedom of expression, and it's really looking for an excuse from which to attack a government that, let's not forget, that on May 1 just nationalised the world's largest reserves of oil in the Orinoco Belt and kicked it, well, they keep them on as minority partners, but basically nationalised the holdings of six US and European oil corporations. So let's not forget that there are serious interests behind this campaign, people who actually will use anything to try and discredit the Chavez government and stop what's going on, because they have... It's really beginning to hit the pockets of the wealthy around the world.
Well, thanks very much for clarifying that, Stuart. I know some of the neighbourhood residents here were confused, I think, by the images that we saw on SBS of the...
Why wouldn't you be? But I think the one thing that should be kept in mind, everyone should keep in mind with this, is that there are very powerful interests that the Venezuelan revolution is affecting. That means that they will do anything. We've seen it enough times. I mean, they launched a coup against Chavez. You saw what they did against the Salvador Allende government in Chile in the 70s. I mean, they launched a coup and killed tens of thousands of people in defence of the corporate interests. So what that means is any time, and unfortunately, even government-owned stations like SBS are not immune to it, because where their funding comes from, we know that the Howard government in particular has been very ruthless in its dealings with stations like SBS and ABC. They toe the line that the government wants, and the government toes the lines that the corporations want. So what that means is you should always seek out before, even when it looks bad, because they always make it look bad, you should always seek out the other point of view. It doesn't mean you automatically assume that Chavez government's right. There's been enough examples from people who, with the best of intentions, have apologised for, you know, crimes in the Soviet Union or the rest of it, because they didn't want to give the right wing excuses, to know that you don't just automatically assume that just because you support a revolution, you don't automatically assume that the government's always doing something right. But you always have to seek out the facts, and don't base what the corporate media say unless you can actually verify it and seek it out. So I'd really encourage people to do that. I mean, Green Left's one way, but also good websites around Venezuela, like VenezuelaAnalysis.com, which actually, you know, is quite independent. It runs a whole range of views, and it specialises in getting out these facts.
Okay, we'll take that on board. We're lucky to have people in the world like Chavez, and we're lucky to have you talking to us today, Stuart. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity to get out some of the facts that have been,
good man.
Distorted. Thank you.